All right, ready to start another podcast with the Dirty Dog? Just let me call him up and go.
Hello.
What? Who's this?
This is the Dirty Dog.
No, this isn't the Dirty Dog I'm looking for.
Oh, this is the Dirty Dog. You called my hotline. How can I help you?
This isn't what I wanted. I wanted to talk about Raw.
But this is my Raw hotline.
Welcome to Main Event Status Radio with your host, the Dirty Dog Darcy, and Mr. Beverly Hills 90210 Troy. Main Eventer, thank you for listening.
Welcome to Main Event Status Radio. I am one half of the podcast host, one half of the World Tag Team Champions of the World. I am the Dirty Dog Darcy, alongside with, most weeks, Mr. Beverly Hills 90210. How's it going, Beverly?
Oh, it's going very well, very well. How about you?
Oh, it's going very, very well. I enjoyed the podcast that we did last week, the special cast number 2 with Fran Derry and intern Lucas from WBCB's 1490 Pro Wrestling Weekly.
Yeah, that was very fun. It was really, they are very knowledgeable, and I like getting them on, getting another voice, another couple voices on.
Oh, yeah, because I know I originally was hoping to go maybe 45 minutes to an hour, but after editing everything up, we went 88 minutes, so I was pretty thrilled about that.
As is apropos with us. We always, we from day one, we thought, oh, if we could get a half hour, and then from there, we've gone long every time, and I'm totally fine with that.
Same here. Obviously, if you guys... Well, yeah, talk to us about, you know, that episode, this episode, or previous episodes, or if you guys are listening to this in the future, let us know about the other episodes that we've done.
Do it up.
And, yeah, also we'll be plugging our Twitter and Facebook later on, so you'll know how to get a hold of us.
Right on. So what are we talking about today?
So, you know, since we took a few weeks off, a few podcasts off, to do a couple of special casts, one with Dean Stahl a couple episodes back, talk about CM Punk. And this episode, you know, last episode we talked, you know, with Fran and Lucas about the WWE Network. We thought we might as well go back to our original concept and go to episode 3 to talk about Monday Night Raw from August 8th, 1994, episode 74 from the WWE Network.
Back in time.
Woo, 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 woo.
All right, yeah, August. So when I turned it on, I was very confused. Because can you describe what this episode opened with?
So I was kind of confused, too. I watched this episode last week, and when I had some free time, the show opened with a few doctors working on a patient, saying that they were running out of time. I'm like... Don't say that they filmed this to say that their patient's going to die, but no.
Yeah, are we going to have a death on air at the beginning of Raw? I don't know about that.
But they weren't referring to that. They were referring to running out of time because Monday Night Raw was about to start.
Yeah, I thought, like, I think I was, I'd be off on the timeline here, but I was like, is this a Isaac Yankum thing, or like what's happening here?
And well, I know then, Isaac Yankum debuted right around then, but I don't,
somewhere around there. So yeah, I was confused, but yeah, oh, they're worried about making it to Raw.
Talk about making it to Raw, that only means da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I had to do that every week. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, you got it.
I enjoy it.
It's good stuff.
So Vinnie Mac welcomes us to Monday Night Raw.
And he's got the man, the macho man, next to him.
Do you know where they were at that week?
They are in Youngstown, Ohio, on the campus of Youngstown State University.
I think the Beagley Center?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, I know I spelt it, but yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it, so I think the Beagley Center or something like that. I'm sorry to everybody who went or is at Youngstown State University. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I think they'll forgive you.
I like to butcher things. That's one thing I have in common with Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah, you and Ed Leslie are the butchers together.
What can I say, homie?
All right, yeah, so we got Macho and Vince there, and they're trying to tie it into this doctor thing, and Macho just says that Tatanka's heart is pounding and pounding and pounding.
Okay, well, I'm happy you wrote some of those lines down, because I didn't. I just wrote down what they were talking about for what we're supposed to see later on in the episode.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
Okay, I know, yeah, Macho Man is with the Vinnie Mac Jack, like you said. You know, they said, you know, Lex Luger's in the arena,
mm-hmm.
and Doink and Tatanka will face IRS and Bam Bam Bigelow, as yep. well as we'll see the King's Court with two of the dozen Hart family siblings.
And we might even have a heart attack on Monday Night Raw!
Which I find to be kind of uncomfortable with what would happen about a decade later.
Oh, sure. Right, but they had no way to predict that. So.
But at least it wasn't Lawler saying that, so that's okay.
You're right on.
So the lights go out, and we get Ted DiBiase and his Undertaker.
Yes, Ted DiBiase's Underfaker.
And I know why. How Paul Bearer's Undertaker is brought out with the urn. Do you see what Ted DiBiase was carrying to bring out his Undertaker?
It was the money, right?
Yeah, it was a wad of cash.
All about the money. It's
all about the money, huh?
Yep, so we got Ted DiBiase's Undertaker against Butch Banks.
Okay, because they barely said anything about the few jobbers on this episode of Raw, so I had to do some Googling to figure out who all the jobbers were this week.
Did you get Butch Banks as yours too?
Yes, I got Butch Banks for this one, and I also got the names for the other three enhancement talent that we had. Well, we'll see later on tonight.
All right, very good, very good.
Okay, so yeah, we have the Undertaker and Butch Banks, and I don't like, what was it, episode one that we talked about, how Crush, you know, Crush's opponent looked like, his tights looked like Bumblebee?
Yeah.
I feel like Butch Banks's tights were very, very similar.
Yeah, and you know, like the early 90s, well, maybe mid-90s even, these tights are very prominent with jobbers. And I don't know why, but it's like the singlet and it's just striped with various colors. But it seems like every Raw you'll see somebody in a striped singlet.
Because I did mention that, you know, this jobber looked like a bumblebee, but a red and black bumblebee. Maybe,
yeah, red and black one.
Maybe this bee was bleeding, knowing the fact that he had to face the Undertaker.
Oh, man.
I would be definitely afraid, too, if I had to face the Undertaker or the Underfaker.
What's your thoughts on Underfaker?
Well, I guess I'll talk more about this match when we actually get into this match. But I remember this angle back in 94, because I would have been, I think about five or six. Yeah, I would have been six during this summer of 94. And at that time, I didn't believe that that was actually the Undertaker.
Oh.
You know, well, I guess, then again, you know, I would have been six, so I wasn't really that hard to fool me back then, back in time in 94.
Fair enough.
But
don't sell yourself short there, Dirty Dog.
Yes, but watching it now in 1994, in 2014, 20 years later, I can tell they were doing some smoke and mirrors to hide the Undertaker's face for people couldn't tell by the face that it wasn't the Undertaker.
You know, I thought they did a fairly good job. The only obvious difference is that the Undertaker's like 4 inches taller than Brian Lee. And I thought that for his performance or whatever, you can tell that he had been training with the Undertaker, which I'm pretty positive that they did together. And he was trying his best, but I don't know. I think he took just like, I'm going to be slow. as his thing.
I didn't want to get into that yet, but for the match, I thought it was very, very slow-paced, and I also hurt my rating for the match, which we'll get into when we get into the match, but...
Let's get into it. Go for it.
Well, but before we do, I know I wanted to mention that, like what you said, that the Undertaker was played by Brian Lee, which, if I remember correctly, what is, or at least, I think was, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but I think at least he was good friends with the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Which is what got him the job.
Yeah, and he's brother to the Harris twins, too.
Okay, yeah, so...
Skull and Eight Ball.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention that, too, that the Undertaker was actually, if not best friends, if not at least decent enough friends with the Undertaker in real life to get the job.
Right, yes, and he is still alive. Just...
Good. So I know I have a few different wrestlers, kind of get mixed up with on who's alive and who's...
Fair enough. Sadly, it is something that can easily happen.
Yes, because I know...
there are too many that are dead, so...
Yeah, and there's a lot that are dead, sadly enough.
Yep, exactly.
But I know one of the first things I wrote down for the note was an exchange between McMahon and Savage.
All right, go ahead.
How McMahon said, "Who else is going to sell out to the $1 million man?" And Savage replied with, "I don't know, Vince, only time will tell."
Yeah, they said that it was going to get, the corporation was going to get bigger and bigger. That was growing. So that seems to be one of the themes of this Raw, or this time period in general.
Yeah, because we will talk about that after this match, more about why McMahon and Savage were questioning who else is going to join the corporation.
I have, so Undertaker put on a chokehold on Butch Banks, and Macho goes, "That's the gurgle hold." He also, "I'm confused."
Well, I would be confused too if I was watching the Undertaker.
Macho is confused a lot of this episode.
Well, because I guess, talking about that reminds me of what Fran said last week on the special cast number 2 about Macho Man and his color commentary during this time.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I really don't remember what Fran said. It's been a week, but yeah, I remember. I just remember Fran talking about it and how at times it could be, I think if I remember correctly, it could be horrible. Or if not, Macho would throw just random lines out like that. Just go back and listen to last week's episode. That's what I would suggest, because I'm confused.
I'm confused.
But yeah, as I say, the only other note I really have, one note I do have, which we talked about before the match, was the Undertaker did a good job, or at least a decent job, doing the Undertaker gimmick, and he was wrestling at a super slow pace, which is like what the Undertaker was doing during this time.
Right. I think he may have taken it a bit too far, but pretty good overall.
Yeah, so do you have anything else you want to talk about the match before the finish?
Yep, they throw in kind of a slight dig. Did you catch? They were like, "Oh, somebody I'd like to see hit is the producer of the Goodwill Games."
Do you know why they made that?
Yeah. Comment? Now, do you know who the producer of the Goodwill Games is,
no,
Mr. Dirty Dog?
No,
that would be Ted Turner.
Oh, I guess that would explain why they made a jab at him. Because do you know what year Ted Turner bought WCW?
Oh, gosh. 89, 90, somewhere around there.
Okay,
yep, it'd have been a few years.
Okay, so I guess that would make sense why they would make a few jabs at him once in a while.
Yep, so very veiled, but if you know, you get it. I just thought that was funny. Yeah, the Goodwill Games that just wrapped up the night before, did a little research on that, yeah.
Okay, because I am happy that, every... Well, I guess this is the third episode so that we've done reviewing a classic show, and I do find it funny that every episode that we've reviewed so far, one of us found a line that either Vince or one of the other commentators made talk about politics.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple more coming up here, too.
Good. So we may as well go into the finish that... Which, this is the only move that I wrote down for my notes. The Undertaker hit a beautiful choke slam.
It was a good looking chokeslam.
And that was it.
Yep. And Brian Lee would go on to use that later in his career too in ECW. He kind of used the chokeslam a lot. So
what do you rate this match?
I gave it 1 star.
Well, I'm happy you rated it higher than I.
Oh, no. Are we getting it?
Yeah. This wasn't a dud.
Oh, darn. That's what I thought maybe we would get the dud.
But it's very close to a dud. 1/10 of a star. And let me explain. You know, like I mentioned, this was a slow-fought match, and the jobber had a great performance putting over the Undertaker, helping him sell like he was the actual Undertaker.
Are you going to give Butch Banks the star of the... Is he going to be your main eventer?
You just got to wait and see.
Ooh, all right. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm waiting with bated breath.
And the Undertaker did a decent job selling and wrestling like he was indeed the dead man.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. And, you know, when we talk later, when we do our top five, I think that's a key is doing the things like the person you're impersonating.
Yeah.
So
now then we go to Leslie Nielsen in front of a green screen.
That's exactly what I wrote. Leslie Nielsen in front of a green screen.
Trying to figure out the whole case about the two Undertakers. Do you want to explain why there was the confusion of the two Undertakers?
Well, sure. So in the 94 Rumble, it was a casket match between Undertaker and Yokozuna. And at the end of the match, Yokozuna, with the help of about 5,000 other wrestlers, put Undertaker into a casket. And then he rose from the dead and went above the Titantron up to the top of the ceiling. And then Ted DiBiase came, but with his new Undertaker and the WWF hired Leslie Nielsen because he's played a cop on the Naked Gun franchise to fight him. And this is him doing that.
Because I did get some amusement that when Leslie Nielsen, I'll make sure I say his name correctly this episode, that he made a comment saying that he doesn't know, but he feels like he's onto something.
Yeah, because he was in front of a cemetery. I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing, at least.
Which makes sense.
Yep.
Then we go to a commercial, we come back, and we go to answer the question, has Ted DiBiase bought out Lex Luger?
Dun, dun, dun.
Then we go to see WWE superstars from the past weekend, and Shawn Michaels had Lex Luger on his Heartbreak Hotel segment, and Michaels was questioning Lex Luger. I thought he was getting after Lex Luger a lot. It was getting Lex Luger frustrated, but meeting up with Ted DiBiase and DiBiase offering him his services.
Yeah, and I don't know what your thoughts on this, but with the whole Lex Luger thing, I just thought they didn't give enough suspicion that Lex Luger might actually be with Ted. And I thought that to make this angle really effective, they should have. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, because the way it would have been cool to see Luger play the heel a little bit.
Well, or even put some suspicion in it, you know.
Yeah.
Play a little more coy with Michaels. Say, you know, oh, it is a lot of money, you know, or he comes out. I just watched the 89 SummerSlam with Sweet Sapphire, you know, selling out to the
Sweet Sapphire,
you know. And through the weeks, she comes out with a nice coat. She comes out with the pearls. You know, why can't Luger do that? Why can't he
come out with a new jacket? Come out
with
a different set of tights or something.
Yeah, but he's got a suit on or, you know, anything to show that maybe he is at least thinking about it. Like, here, you kind of paint yourself into a corner because it's like either he doesn't sell out, which is, you know, spoiler, what happened, or he does, but if he does, there was no foreshadowing. You know, it would just be a swerve for swerve's sake at that point. You know what I mean?
As I said, I don't think Vince Russo is ready for Rod during this time.
Yeah, not quite. See, like, that's something he would do, is they would say no, 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 no for 8 weeks, and then all of a sudden they would turn. Well, there's, you know, there's no payoff there.
Talking about Vince Russo, have you heard that he's put out a podcast?
No, I have not. Well, I haven't listened to it. I sometimes see retweets about him, but...
Yeah, because I know he did put out a podcast. I did download the first podcast. I listened to about the first half.
Okay.
That worked this past week, then I just stopped listening to it. Well, it's not... Well, I guess it's just because we're getting close to under the night, so I wasn't able to finish listening to it, so I stopped it.
Oh, okay.
I think this... He drops another episode, I think, either Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
So I guess, yeah, when this podcast gets released, podcast 2 would already be out. But I am planning on listening to the first and second episode just to see what Vince Russo has to say.
All right.
At least give him a shot.
All right.
Plus, I have the time to listen to a podcast at work, so why not?
I know, yeah. It's a perk.
But... I don't know if I'll listen to it much past the second episode.
All right, so let's get into this.
Okay. So, yeah, then Lex Luger came out to wrestle the next match, and Teddy DiBiase came out when Luger was coming out.
Yep, and he's always trying to hand him this money.
which made me laugh.
Just getting it in his hand means that he's, you know, sold out.
Which made me laugh, too, yeah, because we will talk about that. End of Luger's match, but I know how DiBiase came out and was waving cash at him and all that in the aisle, and then just turned on the left.
Yeah. I don't know. And again, like, they could have had him take the money, because remember, see, you can tell that I've been watching a lot of SummerSlams, but at SummerSlam 89, I think it's 89, when Jesse the Body is the special guest ref.
Yeah, that would be 89, yeah.
Yep. And in the weeks leading up, DiBiase does give him money, and he takes it. And they're like, we saw you took the money. And he's like, yes, just because I took the money doesn't mean that I'm going to listen to him. Which is... Hashtag Jesse Proverb. You know, and I just think, like, that's something they could have done there, too. You know what I mean? Just paint it a little gray. I don't know.
Well, yeah, Luger took the money, so who says Luger's going to listen to the money?
Exactly.
So did you catch the name for this jobber?
I got Chad Miller.
Yes, that's what I got too.
Okay, cool.
Okay. And his singlet is just a basic blue singlet.
Yeah, just no Bumblebee. No Bumblebee action in this match.
I would be blue if I knew I had to face Lex Luger on Monday Night Raw. Just saying.
Yeah?
Yeah. Then did you catch that at the beginning of the match they go... backstage to an inset promo with Ted DiBiase.
Yep. Just a really quick promo with Ted trying to convince Lex to join him.
Saying that, yeah, he was, you know, that DiBiase was successful on buying out The Undertaker and how successful The Undertaker was in the match prior, indicating that if DiBiase can figure out Lex Luger's price, DiBiase would bring him to a success.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, if Luger would look at DiBiase's track record, that is true. Back in 88, February of 88, Ted DiBiase did hire the man to defeat the four-year WWF title run of Hulk Hogan.
It's because who paid for the plastic surgery, brother? It's a twin ref. What happened, brother?
But that... will not be the first time and the only time that Earl Hebner screwed somebody out of the WWF title.
Yes, sir.
Just saying.
All right.
So we might as well go into the match. That Lex Luger did a few arm drags. And I noted that they didn't look too crisp, but they were good enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The one note I wrote is actually with Chad Miller on offense. He was doing like these weird kind of kicks where he would jump up and then kind of like do a jumping stomp to Luger's thigh. I kind of liked him. It was an interesting...
It was unique.
Yeah, very. You don't really see that too often. I kind of liked it.
So I know another thing I noticed in this match that Luger hit... Well, during this time, one of Luger's finishing maneuvers were the running forearm.
Mm-hmm.
And before he hit the running forearm, I did notice that he hit the running clothesline.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get your thoughts on wrestlers doing moves that are similar to their finishing maneuver to set up their finishing maneuver.
You know what? I kind of like it because I kind of like the gimmick where, like, somebody is the master of, like, X move. Like, I know you aren't too huge on, like, independent wrestling, but a very long time back, but in ROH and Ring of Honor, there's a wrestler named Roderick Strong, and his thing was, like, he was the master of the backbreaker. And his finisher was one certain kind of backbreaker, but he would set that up with, you know, all the different kinds.
Okay.
So, and I kind of like that. I kind of like, I mean, I guess Lex Luger being the master of hitting someone with your arm isn't as good, but, yeah. You know, I kind of like along those lines as a deal.
Because talking about ROH, I know, well, I mentioned before that I subscribed to the Wrestling Observer podcast, and I know Brian and Vinny review the ROH television, and
okay.
You know more than me because I normally zone out during the ROH reviews, but I'm sorry, but ROH ain't my thing, man. But there was a feud about who would be the one to use a pile driver as their finisher.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not. Haven't been following it too closely.
Okay. Well, anyway, recently, within the last, I think, 6 months, maybe a year, okay. I don't know, or was it Lex Luger? I don't know! they redid that recently on,
okay.
Or having two guys feud on whose pile driver is most vicious.
Sure.
So do you have any more notes about this match?
I do not.
Okay, well, I'll talk about the finish of the match. That Luger signaled for the running lariat and got it and picked up the victory.
Yep.
Macho said, Luger may have got the pin of the week. And I question if that was the pin of the week, I might just quit watching Raw.
I just don't know how someone can have the pin of the week.
Yeah,
like, there are lots of pins, Macho. I don't know how one pin is better than another.
So kind of like I mentioned with you, what Fran was mentioning at last week's episode, but like Macho, think about what you say once in a while, homie.
I don't think Macho is thinking much about what he's saying.
Yeah. So the winner is Sexy Lexi, and what did you give this match for rating?
Star and a half.
Do you want to know what I rated?
Because I like Chad Miller more than Butch Banks. Okay, what did you give it?
I'll say I liked this match better than last match.
Okay, there's a lot of room for improvement.
Better enough. I doubled last match rating for this match. 1/5 of a star.
1/5. I'm glad that you know how to simplify fractions, because I definitely was going to say 2/10. So,
what can I say? I originally went to college to be a math major.
Yep, that's right.
And the only thing I took out, besides not being good enough to pass Calc 1, not once, but not twice, but took me 3 times to get through it. A lot of cash went to Calc 1.
Oh, dirty dog.
I know how to simplify my fractions.
See, I stay as far away from math as possible.
Well, the dirty dog Rusey wanted to go to school to be a math teacher, but math kicked my butt a little too much.
Oh, brother.
So instead of being a math major, what did I do? I did a 180-degree turn. Then did another 180 degrees. Then did another 360. Where did I lead to? Philosophy.
I don't even know.
I don't know either, man. I was dizzy.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm confused.
So then we go to the SummerSlam report with my
Todd Pettengill.
My first main event status star, Todd Pettengill.
So did you catch who's delivering SummerSlam this year, Dirty Dog?
Todd Pengill was.
No!
Domino's! Our pizza of choice.
You got it.
So, I know another note I wrote down about this and a question I wanted to pose to you. SummerSlam 1994 was on Monday the 29th. Really? Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even know that.
Why were pay-per-views on Monday nights?
I don't even know. Is it something with, like, the cable providers? Like, or was something happening on August 28th? I don't know.
Yeah, because I question, what about Monday Night Raw? Damn it, I want my WWF Monday Night Raw. But, think of it, talking about that, I did some research.
All right.
Episode 1 of our podcast, we covered the 51st episode of Monday Night Raw
from February
7th, 1994. And we were talking about the dog show.
Yes, sir.
And how, you know, as with this week's episode and our first episode, Michael Cole lies to us.
Why is that?
Because the next episode after episode 51 was obviously episode 52, and the date was February 21st, 14 days after the fact.
Okay.
So, I know we talked about this before, but how Michael Cole's line was the Monday Night Raw is the longest running weekly episode.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I wanted to bring that up, that I did some research.
Okay, I understand.
Into logging on to my, warming up my Roku and actually looking at it. So, yeah, so there were a few weeks where Raw wasn't on the air.
Oh, of course.
Damn you, Michael Cole. Okay, but did you, actually, I did write down Domino's is the host of the pay-per-view. Just halfway down my paragraph. But, did you take any notes about Todd Pettengill's SummerSlam report?
Yeah, I wrote down that he did the whole card, which I liked. I think is something that they would actually serve to do more often.
Yeah.
Just to say, this is what you're going to see, you know, if you get the pay-per-view. So I like that.
Double header main event with The Undertaker versus The Undertaker. The
Undertaker, yep.
Then Hart versus Hart for the WWF title inside this 15-foot-high steel cage.
And then we got the 7-foot monster truck Diesel.
Which,
I love that he's the 7-foot monster truck.
Yeah, 7-foot monster Mack truck.
That's a tiny monster truck, by the way.
Well, yeah, but to a man like us, that's pretty tall.
True.
But yeah, because that reminds me of the 1993 King of the Ring promo that Shawn Michaels cut on giving Diesel the name Diesel.
That which makes a Mack truck go.
Oh, yeah, because it was me and Gene interviewing him, asking what his name was, and Michael said, oh, it doesn't matter what his name is.
He, like, 2 seconds later, goes, his name's Diesel.
Yeah, his name is Diesel, as in diesel fuel, that which makes a Mack truck go. Which, yeah, brings a lot of joy and laughter to the both of us.
Yes, it's a great moment.
If I remember for the next Raw review or the next podcast review that we do, I might have to bring up my poem that I wrote in regards to that.
Oh, I think that's something that we all need to look forward to for next week.
So, yeah, then talking about Diesel, yeah, that we go to a video package from the week prior where Diesel helped Shawn Michaels defeat Razor Ramon on Monday Night Raw.
Right.
Then we go to the main event for this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, I want to say a couple more things about that, the SummerSlam thing.
Oh, please
that
do, please do.
Razor Ramon is going to be bringing Walter Payton with him to the ring. They're very into these sports stars, 94, 95. You got Walter Payton here, then you got Lawrence Taylor coming in.
What's the point of Razor having a bodyguard?
Well, because Diesel has Shawn Michaels.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so that's what Todd Pengill said.
Thank you, Todd Pengill.
And then the other note I wanted to say is, so he says Mabel versus Jeff Jarrett is rap versus country. And then he's like, I hear that Heavy D and Conway Twitty have a bet on this one. Now, Heavy D is a rapper who was popular in like the 80s. Conway Twitty is a country star who was popular like in the 70s. I don't know why they pull out Conway Twitty and Heavy D.
Like we mentioned before on previous episodes, is that some of the references and such that WWE would pull out on Monday Night Raw and other shows of theirs, they would pull out random things like that, you know, like an 80s rap star in place of a bet with a 70s country star.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Dre and Garth Brooks? I mean, come on, guys. Come on, Pettengill. Well, get your stuff together.
Next, I know, like, JBL on color commentary now even pulls out lines from, like, the references to, like, the 60s or 70s.
Oh, my gosh, I got that one. Yeah, I heard that one. The F Troop, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And then Michael Cole, I actually kind of liked when Michael Cole put him in his place. He's like, that was a show from 1950s, and it was black and white.
Michael Cole is, well, we mentioned this before, but I do feel like after Michael Cole's heel play-by-play run, I feel like he is a lot better.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So,
all right, so now we can get into that.
Okay, well, this also isn't the last match of the night, but this is the main event of the night. And for the main event of the night, I have to open up a can of Milo to this podcast.
You got it.
And to this main event. This main event is Bam Bam Bigelow and IRS being featured of the Million Dollar Corporation against Tatanka and Doink the Clown.
Yeah, Tatanka and Doink the Clown, that's kind of a strange combo.
I know it was mentioned, I can't remember if it was Vince or Savage that said it, but it was mentioned that this was the first time Tatanka and Doink the Clown teamed together.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure it's probably one of the last times they teamed together, too.
Well, sure.
Spoiler.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing what will happen at the SummerSlam, I would agree with that.
But just like episode one that we reviewed, that IRS came out and told the fans that there are major tax cheats, and money can indeed buy everything, and the Money Incorporated is growing stronger and stronger every day.
You got it.
I wonder if Money Incorporated can buy out this podcast.
Oh, I'm listening to offers.
Ted,
if you want to buy it, you got it, brother.
Ted DiBiase Sr., if you're listening to this, get a hold of us, please.
Oh, please, Ted DiBiase Jr., anyone with more than $5, they can buy it.
Because I only have $4.99, so
yeah, please. I have none. I wear a tuxedo t-shirt with a cent sign on it, like Nikolai Volkoff, so.
I'll even wear a rippable tuxedo just like you were back in the day, Ted DiBiase.
Just all right, go to the match.
Okay, that I did write down a one-liner from Macho Man.
Okay, what you got?
I can't remember, I didn't recall what McMahon and Macho were talking about, but Macho said, my national pastime is the World Wrestling Federation anyway.
Oh, I'm sure they were talking about the baseball strike, which took place in 1994, and they canceled the season.
Do you know about anything about the 1994 strike?
Yeah, well, the owners and the players' association couldn't reach a collective bargaining agreement, so the players went on strike and they canceled the season. So there was not an end to the 1994 baseball season, and that's why, like, Knuckleball Schwartz came out in WWF, you know, saying that he was on strike and kind of all that stuff. So that's a reference because the national pastime, the American pastime, is baseball. So that's why Macho said that his is wrestling.
I wonder what Mr. Beverly Hills' shoot job is.
I'm a baseball player.
I was going to say that you do throw down a lot of history on us, so I just wonder.
Never.
I was just questioning, okay? I'm sorry.
I don't know. Maybe you're onto something, Dirty Dog.
I don't know, but I'll keep thinking about it.
All right, you keep trying. You keep thinking and thinking and thinking.
That's what the great philosopher Macho says. So that's what I'll do. So yeah, IRS and Tatanka start out the match.
Yeah, and there's a lot of tie-based offense from Tatanka.
Is it because IRS was wearing a tie?
Well, of course, but he's whipping him around by the tie, and he's dragging him around the ring. I kind of like it. If you're going to wear the tie, you got to be open to maybe being beat up by your tie.
So I did write down that IRS had the early advantage, but lost it to Tatanka.
Yep.
Then another famous McMahonism that I wrote down was, 1, 2, yes, no.
He threw them all in this match. There were a couple what a maneuvers. There was the 1, 2, oh, we got him. No. He's doing his best. He's bringing out the high spots.
Vince is excited.
You got it, dude.
So, yeah, Doink was tagged in, and Vince tells us that Doink was one of the best technical wrestlers ever.
Okay.
Did you catch that line?
I did not, and I cannot agree with it.
Okay, I was going to ask your opinion about thought that it weren't. If you had to, where would you rank Doink on the best technical wrestlers scale?
Very far down the line.
So,
especially this version of Doink.
Would Doink be rated to a close to a dud then?
Oh, he certainly.
I totally agree with you on that.
1994 Doink is definitely down the line.
Then I know both of us has facial hair. And most of the time I've known you, you usually always had facial hair. And I wanted to ask you about Bam Bam's fashion statement.
Oh, I love Bam Bam's tattoos. I love his goatee. I like Bam Bam a lot.
Because I think... Yeah, for this episode of Raw, Bam Bam, for his whole career, he was bald with the flame tattoo, and he had a beard.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the bald with the beard look.
It can work. Few people I know can really pull off the bald with a beard. It's not always the best, but it can work.
Okay, yeah, because I think Bam Bam
pulled it off. You going to
do it? Yeah, he can do it, especially.
No, are you going to?
If I go bald, I'll try. But I know I... do like the tattoo that he has with the flame, you know, the start of the flame punch being his hairline.
Right. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah. So I didn't even write down the finish of this match.
Okay. So the finish is that, oh shoot, what I've got. Oh yeah. Doink gets written off by IRS.
I guess Doink was a tax cheat.
Yep, he gets the write-off, and IRS and Bammer get the win.
So what do you rate this match?
I have it as a 2.5-star match.
Because I think, along with this being the main event match, yeah, this has the highest rating for the match, or for the whole night.
Okay, what you got?
1.5-star.
Oh, rough.
What can I say? These early rounds were pretty... rough.
Tough critic, man.
So yeah, I feel like I wrote down, you know, to explain my rating. Crowd was into the match. It was all right.
It was all right. That's why you get right down the middle. 2.5.
It's all right to have a good time, because it's all right. Oh, it's all right.
Oh my.
Huey Lewis in the news? Come on now, homie.
I don't have you on this one.
Oh, I didn't mention that. This was not working much for me. Well, just like the first match, this wasn't. Well, the first IRS match that we did for episode one, this match wasn't working that well for me.
Okay.
I also noticed that IRS was super sweaty again. And he must sweat a crap load like I do.
Okay.
And which doesn't take that much for me to start sweating. And I did write down a note to myself saying, don't wear white shirts.
Learn from
the past and try to learn from IRS.
Yep.
Do not wear white shirts, especially that I sweat a lot like he. You know, it's not that hard to get me sweating, so note to self, do not wear white shirts, especially at work. So we do go to a video package with 1, 2, 3 Kid and Owen Hart. Do you take notables?
Yeah, but first we got to say the post-match on this.
Oh, okay, well.
So we got the corporation beating down Tatanka, and then Lex comes out. And I thought that, you know, I'm all about story, and I want the stories to make sense. It does not make sense that the corporation is beating up Tatanka when what happens at SummerSlam happens. You know what I mean? Like, he joins them, right?
Yeah.
So why are they beating him up?
Just to pull a swerve?
I guess, but then you're basically admitting, like, wrestling's fake. You know what I mean? Like, because you're saying, well, they're not beating him up, so...
Well, I guess it kind of ties in more with what we were talking about with Lex Luger possibly joining the corporation.
I guess.
I feel like the Tatanka's turn at SummerSlam to the Money Incorporated was written better than Lex Luger's supposed turn.
Yeah, I think it had.
I felt like it wasn't expected for Tatanka to turn.
Right, I would agree with that.
Especially with his beatdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like the great philosophy group AC/DC once said, money talks.
Yes, it does.
Just saying.
You got it. So, yeah, so DiBiase then, like, his Luger came out to save him. DiBiase again puts the money in his hand. But this time it worked because Tatanka saw the money and he goes, "You sold out! You sold out!" like 30 times. And yeah, Macho again, "I'm confused."
Did you see what happened once Luger chucked the wad of cash out of the ring?
No, what happened?
That he had tossed the cash out of the ring, you know, not caring, not paying attention to where he threw it to. And my eyes were keen to seeing the Million Dollar Man sprint after the wad of cash.
Very good. Making sure, smart.
Making sure the fans didn't get to it. Because if I was there live, I went in the cashless zone my way. I would have tried my hardest to grab the cash.
Heck yeah, I'll be right with you.
So yeah. Well, the funny thing is, I didn't even write nothing down about that. But yeah, now we go to the video package about the 1-2-3 kid and Owen Hart building up the match that they'll have the next week's episode on Monday Night Raw.
Right, because the 1-2-3 kid is in tough form.
I only other note I wrote about that was it was a nice video package.
It was good. I liked it a lot, actually.
It was nice.
It was weird. I actually thought it was weird with how well done it was that it was just for a Raw match.
Yeah,
I thought it was really well done.
It was to the point and it was short.
Yep.
And they got to the point rather quickly and explained to us what's going on.
Yep.
So I like that. Well, I like that. I like it. I like it. I did it.
All right, awesome.
Then we go to the King's Court with Jerry Lawler.
Yep, and he introduces true gentlemen and great athletes, Owen the King of Hearts and Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Because I didn't write down that Lawler tells us that his first guest deserves respect just like him and is a king just like him.
Yeah, a meeting of the kings.
And I want your thoughts on Owen's nickname of the King of Hearts.
I liked it a lot.
Because I know we talked about the first episode of Monday Night Raw, and, you know, with Owen's heel turn, I feel like him winning the 94 King of the Ring in, with Jim the Anvil Neidhart as his bodyguard manager and with a mimicker of the King of Hearts, I feel like that helped Owen's heel turn. It helped put him as a mid-carder, if not upper mid-card.
100%. I think giving him the King of the Ring was a fantastic move.
Okay, then I know Owen talked about, you know, put over his match against Brett at SummerSlam, how they've been facing each other. Yeah, they were facing each other inside the steel cage for the title. And Owen was mentioned that his motivation was the WWF Championship. And that's why he's been beating up Brett this whole time.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well done promo. I thought he did a good job. I thought that the best part of what he's doing is that he's completely, like, delusional. Like, he doesn't know what's happening when he's saying that the family's totally behind me and, you know, he's talking about winning and winning clean and everything's gone his way. I like that a lot.
Well, yeah, because I didn't note that Owen didn't mention that originally their parents and their siblings were on Brett's side, but he was able to win them over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So which I enjoyed then Bruce Hart.
Oh, I got more before Bruce comes on. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Owen says that I annihilated you to Brett, and he also says he humiliated him. I like I said, I like that a lot. Yeah, then Leatherjacket Bruce Hart comes out.
Then Lawler mentioned that the Hart's parents had 12 kids, and I think I also remember Lawler saying that Bruce was the youngest of the Harts.
He says that he's the runt of the litter, but don't know. I believe Owen's the youngest.
Okay, that's what I thought, because I thought Owen was the youngest, and Lawler's comment was, he's the runt of the litter, so I wanted to clarify that.
Yes.
And I'm happy that Stu and Helen didn't have any more Hart children.
Yeah, it looks like Bruce is actually the second oldest, Owen is the youngest. Bruce is 15 years older than Owen. Holy crap. Yeah.
Well, I guess I can't complain too much since my little sister is 21 years younger than me.
Sure.
So I guess, Stu and Helen were years, decades ahead of my father on that.
You got it.
So, I did mention on episode 1 about the Hart family cats, and I do not know how they can handle having so many cats, because this weekend my mother went on a family vacation with her family, leaving me all alone with her two cats in her two-bedroom apartment, and holy crap, they're a pain in the rear end. That before we sat down and started this podcast, both of them had to come lay down right next to me, right by my computer, and the other one had to jump up on my desk, and I was freaking out, thinking, like, if I let them stay in my room with me while I record, they're going to screw something up.
Speaking of cats in the Hart family, so have you... Okay, this is the Hart of the cats.
Remember, I'm a dog. I don't like cats.
I'm losing it. Okay.
I am happy you're having a good time.
Okay.
Breathe.
So Bret Hart and Owen Hart, their nephew, Teddy Hart, he's a wrestler too. Yes. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yes, and he has a lot of cats.
He has a lot of cats. He trains the cats. When he wrestles in Mexico, he brings the cat down to the ring and it sits in the corner.
Well, yeah, because I remember
seeing... And he doesn't have it on a leash. He just sits up there.
Well, yeah, because I remember seeing a picture that somebody tweeted. Well, I listen to MLW Radio with Conan and Court Bauer, a former writer for SmackDown, and I know they had Teddy Hart on one episode, I don't know, probably a couple months back now, and I remember seeing a picture on Twitter about him, Teddy Hart, being in the ring and seeing, the cat perched clinging onto the top rope in the corner. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap, I don't even want to wrestle because, knowing the fact that there's a cat on the top rope.
It's because you're the dirty dog.
Yeah. What can I say? I just want to chase the cat around.
Oh, my. Okay, so...
Let's go back to Bruce Hart.
Yeah, Bruce, I wrote that Bruce looks like he's auditioning for a job because he's going crazy. He's just yelling and screaming. It's like he calls Neidhart. He goes, "You big, flat-topped, moronic geek. You all, without Neidhart, Owen, he saved your bacon."
Well, yeah, I noted that, Bruce said that no one is on Owen's side and he's a cheater.
Mm-hmm.
And Owen Hart is a disgrace to the family.
Yep.
And is there, what other insults do you write down that Bruce Hart gave out?
I wrote down the Savior Bacon, big flat top moronic geek. That's about it.
Okay, because I felt like, how it seemed like Jerry Lawler lost control of the segment with Bruce Hart just yelling and screaming.
Well, and I would say that too, because especially when you look at how it ended, ends.
Yeah, because it went to a commercial break. Like, we go to a commercial break about old things. Oh, well, I guess that's a different.
Oh, we got to talk about that later.
Okay, we just randomly go to a commercial like nothing.
Yeah, it's so obviously it got out of hand because they didn't even know how to bring it back. They just ended it.
Yeah, so then we might as well talk about the commercial I was referencing to. Then we go to a commercial about old things and new things. We see a commercial about the new generation.
The old car?
yes.
thing that they showed with like Laurel and Hardy, and it just like collapses when the fat guy sits in it.
Yes. I'm happy neither one of our cars do that when we sit in it.
I sometimes think, though, that if I sit too hard, my car will end up like that car, though.
But I'm happy neither one of us are that big, though.
Not yet.
Well, if we are, I'm sorry for Mrs. Beverly Hills.
Oh, my. Okay, so anyway, moving on. After the New Generation commercial, what do we got?
Bob Backlund.
Did you catch what his shirt said?
No, I didn't.
Bacon Academy.
But before we go to Mr. Backlund and his opponent.
All right.
Did you see who was featured from the old generation?
Yeah, some. I can remember Ivan Putski, Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik. Those are the only ones I remember.
Okay, I know there's a fourth one, and the only person I remember was Hulk Hogan.
Right, yep.
And I want to give a shout out to Vince McMahon because the new generation is now old.
Yep, you got it.
So I guess the old generation is old and the old generation is older. So Vince, kick out the new generation, Jack.
Ah, got it. I get what you're saying.
Dig it. Now we go to Mr. Backlund. Indeed.
Okay, we got Bob Backlund in the Bacon Academy shirt.
Against Kevin Kruger.
You got it, Kevin Kruger.
And like I said, that I had to Google all three jobbers for the night on, yeah, just because I did not know who these guys were. And neither did the announcers really say who they were either.
I listened very closely. That's the only way I got it.
And
so at the start, go ahead.
I did take note about what Mr. Backlund looked like. And with his longer, shakier hair, he looked like he was still from his prime wrestling career.
I would agree with you.
From the 70s.
He was looking pretty good.
Yeah, I think he was like 43, I think. Oh, 45.
45, yeah.
And yeah, how he had no theme song. And and how McMahon was saying that he held the WWF title from 78 to 83.
Right.
So yeah, he lost the title 11 years before that, or before this night's episode of Raw.
Yep.
So that would be like, what, 31 years ago from today? Like
that
he lost
sounds
the title?
Right to me. To that a sounds right
baby?
To me. Yep.
Go Sheiky Baby. And Vinnie Mac tells us that Bob Backlund wants to be once again the WWF champion.
Foreshadowing.
Yes.
So Bob, he when he starts, he really, really wants to shake this guy's hand.
And Kevin Kruger, just like Freddie, didn't want to shake his hand.
He refuses to shake Bob's hand.
If I see Mr. Backlund walking the streets of St. Cloud, Minnesota, which, you know, he doesn't live that far away from Princeton.
Yeah.
If he walked up to me and puts out his hand to shake it, I will shake his hand.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
I do not want him to slap on the crossface chicken wing.
No, sir. Or the chicken wing crossface, as Vince keeps calling it.
But then again, I guess if he has my hand, it'd be that much easier for him to slap it on.
Yes, sir.
If he slaps it on, I will see that as a sign of respect to Mr. Backlund.
Okay, anyway, talk about the match.
Okay, that Backlund shows us several counters, which I'm very, very impressed with, but the fans in the arena weren't really that impressed.
Yeah, he did a good job of mat wrestling and everything, and I thought he did a good job playing off the crowd, too, saying, "We want Brett." Oh, boring, too, they chanted as well. And, but I liked when they were chanting that he gets up on the ropes and he goes, "No!"
I didn't mention that too. Yeah, we get a "We want Brett, we want Brett," and Kevin Kruger, you know, encourages them.
Kevin Kruger's in the pink, just like Brett. Maybe he was secretly like a Brett apologist.
Yeah, so I did mention that. That was a great way to continue the Backlund's feud with Brett because they did mention in commentary that Backlund had a match with Brett like a few weeks before or whatever,
right?
Or you know, within the recent past.
Yep. Yeah, and he put on the crossface chicken wing, and then he looked at his hands like he was looking at Saturn or Venus.
Well, yeah, I didn't write down that. Backlund taunts after Kruger taunts the crowd, Backlund went up and taunts the crowd. They boo him, and he stepped down from the turnbuckles, walked over to Kruger, and just slapped on the crossface chicken wing.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that a lot.
So, yeah, Mr. Backlund is the winner.
Yep.
What do you rate this match?
I actually didn't write one down for this. Star and a half.
You want to know what my rating is?
Oh, gosh. Is this the dud?
No. Three-fourths of a star. Kind of a dull match, but the cross-race chicken helped the rating.
Yes.
And because he's from Princeton, which is like, what, half hour away from St. Cloud on Highway 95?
Yeah, I said that's all right.
I enjoy Mr. Backlund. I wish he would run for governor of the state of Minnesota.
Oh, my.
I would vote for him. Just like Mama D voted for Jesse Ventura back in 1988. Or 1998, I'm sorry. My bad.
Love it.
Okay, then. Yeah, like you said, after the match, Mr. Backlund stared at his hands, like foreshadowing his soon-to-be character change.
Yes.
Then we go to a commercial and come back, and Savage McMahon put over what is going to come on the Monday Night Raw the following week, which would be 1-2-3 Kid for His Own Heart and another King's Court.
Right.
Then we go backstage. Do you want to talk about this backstage encounter?
So Lex Luger goes back to the Million Dollar Man's locker room to try to find him, but what he does find is Nikolai Volkoff in the tuxedo shirt with the cent sign, the 1 cent man, Nikolai Volkoff, because he had been bought by Million Dollar Man. And Volkoff is very welcoming to Lex Luger, but they are soon interrupted by Tatanka, right?
Yes, I wrote down that they continued their argument.
Yes, big-time argument.
Then Raw went off the air.
Yep, then Raw went off the air.
They fade to black.
You got it. So what's your overall thoughts on Raw tonight?
I feel like, just like episode one that we covered, the 51st episode of Monday Night Raw, that is, very jobber-heavy. I feel like this episode was better than the 51st episode that we reviewed a few weeks back.
Right.
I feel like a good capsule of 1994 WWF.
Yeah.
I feel like they did a better job advancing the storylines, with Bob Backlund, with Lex Luger, with The Undertaker, than I feel like they did with that 51st episode that we reviewed a few weeks back.
Right. I would agree with that.
So, and like I said, I didn't care so much about the Undertaker match. I didn't really care much about the Lex Luger match. The tag match brought it up a little bit for me. Then just seeing Mr. Backlund, I was just happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought the...
Whenever I see Mr. Backlund, I become Mr. Happy. The dirty dog becomes a clean dog for the few minutes Mr. Backlund's on my television screen.
I like it.
Then now he's off, and he's about to turn crazy. The clean dog might become a little dirty.
Oh. Okay, so who's your main eventer for this?
Okay, well, my main eventer has to be Mr. Backlund.
Ah, very good.
Of the beautiful cross-faced chicken wing that he put on.
It was good.
The crazy villain that he was teasing that he'll become in a few weeks. And because he's from Princeton, Minnesota. Half hour from St. Cloud.
Nice. All right. My main eventer, my most valuable player, is bacon. We got Bruce Hart talking about saving your bacon. We got Bob Backlund out in a Bacon Academy shirt. Bacon is my main eventer.
Then my jobber is brought to you by Bacon.
Who's your jobber?
The Underfaker.
Ooh, okay.
I wrote down this notes about why he's my jobber. Slow, boring, boo.
I will play with all those. I would agree with those. My jobber is Bruce Hart. He was just too crazy. He
couldn't rein him in.
Yeah, and he started too high that there's nowhere left to go. He didn't build up to the craziness. He started with crazy and he just got worse. And I don't think that's what should have happened. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we go to our top five list, I wanted to talk to you about, which we obviously did, about the enhancement talent for this episode of Monday Night Raw.
All right.
We had Butch Banks, Chad Miller, and Kevin Kruger.
Okay.
Because I had to go, well, I Googled, you know, 1994 WWF Raw and found, like, the, you know, like a page for all the results for Raws from 1994.
All right.
And I clicked on this episode. You know, they gave me the match listing for the card. And I clicked on those three guys' names to see what their statistics are and anything about them.
Okay.
There's nothing written about them. No history, nothing. And they didn't even have their statistics.
Oh, man. Mystery man.
So I'm like, okay, if that's the case, then I might start a spreadsheet in regards to every card that we cover on the podcast.
I think that's a great idea.
Just to see, you know, keep up with how many matches that we cover and what everybody's ranking is, you know, for wins and losses. I might even go back to previous episodes and write down how you and I rate it and even them out.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
So, you know, just for we can keep that in hand, just if in the future, if we ever call upon that.
Okay.
Then we may as well talk about the top five list. And for this episode, you picked out the top five list. You want to explain what we're doing?
Yes, I did. So we are, in honor of the Underfaker, we're doing the top five, and I said most memorable, so you can do favorite, least favorite, worst, best impersonators or ripoff gimmicks.
Okay, I did the worst impersonators.
All right, I did a couple. Well, I did one good one, and maybe two good ones, three bad ones.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So what you got? You go first. Number five.
My number five. Well, my one through four, I was easily able to pick off. My number five, I had to think about it a little bit. I even had to Google this.
Ooh, I had to think about a lot.
And once I Googled this and I remember this, I'm like, I should make this my number one, but I'm too lazy to scratch stuff out. I'm going to pick this as my number five.
Okay, well, who you got?
Kevin Nash as Arn Anderson.
Oh,
Yeah, that's why I had to mention this. Like,
yeah, that's like,
if you pod listener don't know, this is back in what 96, 97 when Arn Anderson had to retire, and then the following week on Raw, the NWO came out dressed up as the Four Horsemen, and they were making fun of Arn Anderson having to retire.
Yeah, and they were making fun of his alcoholism and not good stuff. Not good stuff.
So, yeah, I had to mention that. Yeah, Kevin Nash as Arn Anderson has to be my number five worst impersonator.
Okay. My number five is actually, this will be on the good end. And I had a multitude to pick from because in the 80s, you know, the Rock and Roll Express were the hottest thing and they spawned a billion different tag teams that were kind of just like them. And I just decided to pick, since we're kind of in the 90s WWF era, I picked the Rockers.
Good choice.
I thought they did a good job of kind of taking the young, good-looking, you know, rock and roll, whatever, tag team gimmick and take it as best as they could. And I thought they did a good job. So there's my number five.
My number four has to be Fake Kane.
Hey, let me just jump right in. My number four is Fake Kane.
Well, I'm happy that, well, if that's our number four, we both might as well talk about it.
Yeah.
The reason why I picked Fake Kane was I feel like it was a spinoff of a copy of what we watched on this episode of Raw of Undertaker versus Undertaker.
Right.
Since Kane and Undertaker were storyline brothers, it's only fitting to have the fake Kane. And I think it only went through like one pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And it was also a spinoff of the movie that Kane did with WWE Studios, See No Evil.
Yeah.
I just find it to be completely silly and a complete waste of time.
Yeah, it was bad. Those bad stuff. Luckily, Festus was able to rebound a little bit. But, man, woof.
Well, yeah, because if I remember correctly that when Kane finally kicked fake Kane out, that he even took the mask and hair off.
Yes.
And I guess that's a foreshadow to nowadays where Kane wears a mask and fake hair.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, then if you already said your number four as well, I might as well go to my number three, and it has to be the Underfaker. Just because, you know, with this match, and I remember watching SummerSlam 94 before. Well, it's been many years, but I wasn't impressed with the Underfaker's work.
Yeah, I was not either.
So, yeah, I might as well throw in the Underfaker as my number three, especially with this card that we watched tonight. That, you know, with the Undertaker always having to have his hair in his face. I know that was the Undertaker's gimmick back then, but, like, that's just a turnoff. Like, it's just, like, I like to see my wrestler's face. I like to see their facial expressions.
Oh, okay.
And just that, well, I guess, like I said, that's the Undertaker's gimmick back then. Like, okay, whatever, I'm over it.
Okay.
Who's your number three?
All right, my number three, another ripoff tag team. So, again, in the 80s, you had, like, the big one, and then you had a lot kind of offshoots of it. This one, an offshoot of the Legion of Doom, I would say would be the ripoff, the Powers of Pain.
Well, I'm happy you didn't say Demolition.
No, heck no. That's a different thing. I don't even want to get into the Demolition versus Legion of Doom battle. I don't even think they're ripoffs. They're something entirely different. Whereas I think the Powers of Pain are a complete ripoff. They were wearing the same kind of clothes. They have the face paint on. They're two big jacked up guys. Like, if you think the Demolition looks like the Legion of Doom, well, I don't know about that. Just because those guys are fat. I don't know. And not that it's bad, but they were.
I was going to say, if fat ain't bad, since if fat is bad, we're bad.
You got it, so.
And I just want to say, here comes the axe. Here comes the smasher. Demolition coming to get you.
All right, go ahead. Who's your number two?
My number two has to be fake. Fake Diesel.
Oh, I totally forgot about
just
fake Diesel and fake Razor Ramon.
I'm not going to get into my number one quite yet. Foreshadow.
Okay,
yeah, my number two, fake Diesel, you know, which would later become, you know, or which was Isaac Yankum, DDS, which would become Kane, the current Kane, that you can just easily tell by his body build and his face that wasn't Diesel.
Clearly.
Yeah, clearly, and I just remember, I think the 1997 Royal Rumble, that fake Diesel was entered into the Rumble match, and just seeing him, you know, kind of waddling out to the ring and all that, like, at the Alamo Dome, you know, all that, like, this ain't Diesel, like, whatever. So, yeah, I'm just over fake Diesel.
Okay.
Like, whatever. What's your number two?
All right, my number two is a tie, because they kind of do the same thing. Well, three-way tie. Charlie Haas, Big Show, Damian Sandow.
Out of those three, Damian Sandow nowadays, he makes me laugh. Hallelujah, hallelujah. And when Big Show did his impersonations, I laughed.
Oh, I love the Big Show impersonations. Shokishi was awesome.
Fat bastard.
The Shulkster was awesome. Haas, but Mr. the, I don't know what they called him, but when Charlie Haas did the Mr. Perfect one.
I know he did JBL as well.
My personal favorite is the Mr. Perfect one. Because he was like in an arcade.
Oh, yeah.
And he was doing all the things terribly that Mr. Perfect did. He couldn't hit the popper shot basketball. He's throwing gutter balls. He's missing in the batting cage. Just great stuff.
Do you pick that? Is that your favorite because Mr. Perfect was from Minnesota?
Oh, maybe.
And did you pick that because Larry the Axe Hinnian lives out in the boonies outside of St. Paul, Minnesota?
Maybe. Secret. It's a secretly why I did it.
Fair enough.
So all right, who's your number one?
My number one, which you kind of preluded to, my number one has to be Fake Hey Yo. Fake Razor. And just like, you know, Fake Diesel, you can easily tell he wasn't the same person. He wasn't Scott Hall. The limit of the promos I remember watching a Fake Razor was just horrible.
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
And, yeah, he has to be, you know, he just has to be my number one worst impersonator of all time.
Yeah, very good. My number one is the aforementioned Underfaker.
Oh, yes.
I think the standard at which Faker gimmicks are compared. I thought he was, yeah, just all those words you use when you put him as the jobber, slow, boring, all of it. Just, you know, Brian Lee isn't bad. He's got some skill. He's all right. If you watch in
ECW,
want to say 97 ECW, yeah, probably his best work. I haven't watched any Smoky Mountain, but I think a lot of people really like him. 1994 Smoky Mountain, yeah, which kind of got him this job. So yeah, I think he has some good points, but this is not one of them. I mean, it's kind of set up for failure. How are you ever going to do better than the, you know, the real creation, right?
Oh yeah, I feel like that with, you know, especially with all of my, you know, my 1 through 4, you know, my Fake Can, Under Fake, or Fake Diesel, Fake Razor. Yeah, how can you live up to the original creation? You can't.
Exactly. And that's why, like, these Faker gimmicks don't work. Because how are you supposed to do that?
You just can't.
Yep, exactly.
So, do you have any final thoughts or any final memories from the summer of 94, 94 wrestling or anything?
The solid days of 1994. Good stuff. I was going into second grade, living life without a care in the world.
Yeah, and, I think I would have been going into first grade then, so.
Oh, little young, dirty dog. I don't have any
Beverly Hills. So do you have any final or any plugs?
Twitter @ Beverly Hills MES. Follow us.
Yeah, then yeah, for me it's on Twitter @ Dirty Dog MES, dog as in DAWG. Also search us out on Facebook, Main Event Status Radio. So yeah, then follow us, talk to us, speak to us. We're doing this podcast for you guys. I hope you guys enjoyed the 2 special casts that we put out last 2 weeks. I hope you like episode number 3. Next week we'll still talk about it. We might have another special cast next week. We might have a regular episode next week. Guys, just gotta wait and see. So
keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. So for Beverly Hills, I am the Dirty Dog. See you guys at the matches.